The other thing I thought I'd talk about is to look at that connection between the declining population and the decline in Māori land holdings. It's really easy to get quite sort of caught up in the whole sort of emotional side of the raupatu or the confiscation, and to sort of see the century as this kind of process of this kind of, you know, terrible way in which land is seized off people. But it's really that kind of it's that legal process that causes a lot more harm and damage to Māori than the raupatu ever did. The raupatu is what Māori referred to as the land confiscations. Okay, so that's the term that they use when they talk about that. So I'll give you some figures, okay? Because as I said before, I think it's important to try to sort of quantify some of these arguments. Between 1861, so the Land Court actually isn't operating then, but this just seems to be the period in which these figures were drawn. Between 1861 and 1891, so really did the beginning of the Liberal era, land held by Māori under communal title was halved from around 8.8 million hectares to around 4.4. We're talking North Island here. This legal process causes way more harm to Māori land holdings than confiscation or things like that had ever done. It's a really insidious sort of process because not only are Māori pitched against Māori, but we also find that there are several ways in which Māori find themselves getting dragged into this process. One of the ways in which often a court proceeding will begin is that there'll be a potential buyer who will start to put pressure on people in the community, who will try to soften them up, say, look, you stand to make quite a bit of money here. There's a way in which potential buyers are able to kind of, you know, exploit some of those rivalries that you've seen in many other aspects of Māori society. So there's nothing new there, okay? We find these really strange, on the surface appear these kind of strange situations where some Māori ultimately sell their land as a way of proving that it was their land in the first place. But for whatever reasons, the undeniable fact is that the Land Court effectively becomes a way in which a lot of Māori land is stripped. And the Māori name has just escaped me. Gregor might be able to help me, but Māori referred to the Land Court as basically the court that takes land away. Hopefully before the end of the talk that name will come back to me. But quite clearly Māori knew that getting involved in the Land Court really had a very positive outcome. Okay, but those sort of figures are really important. So the Liberals get to power, and this is where I want to pick up on my statement at the beginning of making sure that we don't overlook the 1890s. And we have this sense of the, you know, when we think of the Liberals, of this kind of benevolent government that creates a worldwide reputation for social welfare, etc., etc. We've got a Minister of Lands, Mackenzie, who himself, you know, his family, his background has experienced, you know, the sort of, you know, horrors of the sort of Highland clearances, etc. The Liberals become one of the most land-hungry administrations in New Zealand history. Between them and the Reform Party that gets it, I know this is getting into the 20th century, but again, just to sort of help with some of the numbers, over the next 30 years, that acreage that's in Māori communal title is halved yet again. Okay, and a good deal of that is lost under the Liberals' watch. How do they get rid of so much land? How do they get so much land out of the hands of Māori and into the hands of non-Māori? They attacked the bigger states in the South Island in particular, some on the East Coast here. But what they did was they leased a lot of land, offered big, generous leases, some of them 999-year leases. So it's kind of your land forever, but it's not. So you'll pay us a rent for this. And in that way, they're able to get more Europeans onto the land. By the early 20th century, something like 10,000 farmers have taken up leases offered by the Liberals. It means that the Crown still retains possession of that land and title, but they're able to sort of lease it out. But the point is, what it does is it clearly signals, it reinforces this notion that this family farm, that New Zealand's future prosperity, which they see as being based on the land, it's full steam ahead. But to do that is going to require more and more land, which is going to ultimately alienate more and more Māori land. So when you're looking at the Liberals, when you're looking at that sort of period there, as well as being aware of some of their welfare policies and things like that, I think it's really important that you also bear in mind the Liberals' land policy and its impact on Māori. The point you made is a really important one, but we tend to focus on that. We tend to focus on the busting up of the bigger states, and we often don't look at the sort of, again, the kind of rather more insidious way in which the Liberal government operated when it came to acquiring Māori land. You've got to remember, Seddon's image of God's own, his image for New Zealand, is something that reflects the vision of people like him. And when they talk about God's own, when they talk about what they're trying to achieve, they're not talking about tāwhiao, they're not talking about Māori per se, they're talking about people like them, settler stock, okay? So that's what their policies are generally going to represent. I want to read something to you that I came across. I was reading the 1893 yearbook, as you do, and I came across this at the start of the section, because one of the things that really interests me is when you look at the old census, the old yearbooks, is the way in which they separate the population. There's a separate category on Māori. And there'll be in the Māori population count, there'll be a column that says number of Māori living as, number of half-castes living as Māori, or number of half-castes living as or with Europeans. So they differentiate even there between those Māori who are happy living in the European world and those who aren't. We've got a whole section. But I came across this. This is from the 1893 yearbook. And it's in the section on natives. And it said this. It said, possessed of great intelligence, susceptible of civilization, and owners of an immense area of land, the native people form an important element in the New Zealand population. Now that the Māori wars are over, the natives have turned their attention to peaceful purists. To peaceful pursuits. And had it not been for the baneful effects of war, their social condition might have advanced far beyond the stage it has at present reached. Loss of life in the field, death from disease, the privations incident to wartime, and the disturbances in their ordinary occupations perceptibly diminished their numbers and checked for years the progress they were making in civilization. Okay, it's the sort of patronising tone's not surprising given the period that we're talking about, and there's a nice little bit of Liberal propaganda in there as well, in which they sort of perpetuate the notion of how important they are. It's also the kind of implied sort of rubbing of hands together when they talk about the immense area of land as well. But one of the other things I think is kind of interesting is there's this notion of a kind of a romanticised view of New Zealand pre-treaty. Gets a bit sort of messy during the wars, but there's this kind of light at the tunnel as we come into the 1890s, that they're sort of bursting forth and there is signs again. And it's this sort of image that people are wanting to sort of portray, that with the war behind us, things are going to get better. And Māori are going to once again show, as they'd shown earlier, that they do have potential to be civilised. And I think that, again, there's some interesting stuff we can do here with regards to that kind of Liberal sort of mythology of what sort of place New Zealand is in the 1890s. They don't mention there, when they talk about the fact that they're owners of immense areas of land, that it's their desire to get as much of that land off them as they possibly can.